This is an MPB Think Radio podcast.
Hello, I'm Dr. Nancy Lottridge Anderson, president of New Perspectives, a fee-only financial advising firm and co-host of Money Talks. For over 10 years, Money Talks has been answering your personal financial questions and sharing knowledge about money management. Money Talks can be heard Tuesdays at 9 a.m. on MPB Think Radio. Podcasts can be found on our website, money.mpbonline.org, or on your smart device's podcasting platform.
Welcome to In Legal Terms from MPB Think Radio. It's the show all about you and your rights. I'm Liz Gill. Now, our laws are created to help us and protect us, and we should know what our rights and regulations are, know our laws, so that, you know, we don't step over the line and we don't be illegal, but we should know where that line is to get the most of your rights. And Richard Courtney is going to help us navigate the world of Mississippi laws for Medicaid. Welcome to the show, Richard.
Good to be here.
We are so glad to have you. We've had you as a frequent guest because you are an expert. I'm a state expert on so many different facets of aging and families and family law. So just remind us a little bit about your background.
Well, I have twin daughters who were born in 1979, and one of my daughters has cerebral palsy and learning disabilities. She's a wheelchair user, lives at home with us still, and she got through community college a little bit more difficult than our other daughter, who went to Mississippi College, as I did and my wife did. So, but she has had three different kinds of Medicaid now, Melanie has, and she doesn't mind me using her name. And she's had Social Security disability now. She's had SSI, which is a low-income program of Social Security. So that's our personal background and journey of public benefits that sort of positioned me after trying to find my way in the legal world through my dad's general practice, collection work. I've done cellular telephone tower location zoning things, and then found my way to special needs law and elder law some 30 years ago. And that's where the Lord wants me to be, I think. So because it's just a wide array of issues. There are housing, there are tax issues. There's incapacity planning people, families need to do like we need to do. And also the public benefits issues. So I'm looking forward to talking about Medicaid today because every listener probably within their family circle is going to intersect with Medicaid of some type at some time.
Well, and it's good to know it speaks to you that this is your passion, mm-hmm. because it has touched you, it has touched your family, and you know that's a reason for you to specialize in it and to, you know, be able to share all that information with us.
Yeah, and you mentioned how laws are to benefit us. Medicaid and Medicare were signed into law in 1965 by President Lyndon Johnson. Well, some interesting statistics I have found was that in 1963, when President Kennedy implemented Senior Citizens Day, recognition then, 39% of Americans over 65 lived under the poverty level of income. In the 2010 census, 10% lived under the poverty level. That vast increase in security, financial security, is in large part attributed to the implementation of Medicare and Medicaid, so that people didn't get impoverished by the long-term costs of medical care as much.
And the long-term cost of medical care can be very sky high. So today we're going to be talking on the focus of the big, confusing, controversial topic of Medicaid. But we're going to stick with some facts as we know what they are today, April 23rd, 2024 in Mississippi. And we can learn about some of those proposed options later in the broadcast. So, you know, Richard, I know you have mentioned you have a lot of exposure to Medicaid, but you know, let's start with what it is and who does it cover.
Right. Medicaid is a medical insurance program. It doesn't send you a check in the mail. That's Social Security programs. But it does pay the providers of medical services. It doesn't a lot of people don't understand that Medicaid's not going to pay my nursing, well, not going to pay my home care cost necessarily. It doesn't pay everything. You have to qualify for particular Medicaid programs. So there are a number of different Medicaid programs. When I have clients call or attorneys call and say, well, I'm trying to get on Medicaid, I said, well, what program are you on or trying to get on? They say, what? Medicaid's Medicaid, isn't it? No. I describe it as Medicaid is like the flea market down in the country. You know, you got that long pavilion roof that says flea market, but under it, you have all these different booths for different things. That's what Medicaid is like. There are different coverage groups within Medicaid, such as my daughter's first one was the Disabled Child at Home Medicaid. We didn't think that my wife and I qualified for her to be on Medicaid as a child because we had too much money. We were making too much, and we found out we were wrong. There is a program for children under age 18 who have significant disabilities that does not look at the parent's income and assets and only looks at the child. And since she had less than $2,000 in her name, she got Medicaid coverage until she was 18. So I've counseled doctors and CPAs and architects that, yes, your child could qualify for this. They said, wow, this is good because we now can get some physical therapies and things that our private insurance plan didn't cover or they couldn't afford otherwise. Then there are there are Medicaid programs for children that don't have disabilities. You've heard of CHIP, Children's Health Insurance Program. It's not really Medicaid, but it is for healthy children who live in a low-income household. Then there are some Medicaid programs for children under age 6 and then from 6 to 19, depending on the household income. These could be healthy children, but their household income is so low they really can't afford medical insurance. Well, they may get Medicaid for free. That is to keep this child healthy so they don't become a drain on the state or you know, destitute later. Then there's the one everybody seems to know about, and that's nursing home Medicaid. My mom is in a memory care unit, but if she has to go to a nursing home, she will have to qualify for Medicaid based on income and assets. So we work with clients in that area as part of our elder law practice. And there are there's another kind of Medicaid that would give someone that's got fairly low income free Medicare supplement insurance. So, for instance, I'm over 65. I have Medicare. If my income was less than $1,265 a month, then I could get free Medicare supplement insurance to pay that 10 or 15% Medicare doesn't cover. I could get it for free from Medicaid under the QMB program, Qualified Medicare Beneficiary. So that's the wonky stuff that I get to live with every day and tell people, well, yes, you may qualify for this or that program, and let's see. Also, one other thing is if there are low-income folks who have SSI, that's a Social Security program, you automatically, in Mississippi and about 31 states, you automatically get Medicaid insurance if you have SSI payments every month.
So this could virtually affect anyone. You can't look at someone and know if they might be a Medicaid some kind of benefit recipient or qualify for.
That's right. Until I know their disability or physical limitation status or intellectual limitations and their income and asset picture, then I can determine, you know, well, you may qualify for this, or no, I'm sorry, there's really nothing I can think of that you get in Medicaid. But for so many families, we're living longer, we've got good health care, and living into our late years. My mom's 94, and she's still going strong. She may need nursing home Medicaid to help pay the bill. So,
we're so glad to be able to have you on the show to have this information where our listeners who are hearing this will think, oh, wait, my brother needs to hear this, or my aunt mm-hmm. needs to hear this. And folks will be able to share that information, share that on this podcast. Now, there is a easy-to-remember website where you can see if you qualify for Medicaid, locate a regional office, or you could watch a webinar. It's medicaid.ms.gov. You mentioned about the nursing home. I think, you know, that is one thing, you know, when we've had you on Money Talks, heard on MPB Think Radio at 9 a.m. on Tuesdays, and also a podcast, you know, we've had you on there before, and people want to talk about, oh, what do I do with the money? And there's things you can legally do, things you can illegally do. Speak a little bit about that.
Yeah, in order for someone to qualify for Medicaid to help pay a nursing home. And again, Medicare does not pay nursing homes, so people need to understand that. They may pay part of the first 100 days after someone gets out of the hospital and goes to a nursing home. But then after 100 days, it's either private pay or Medicaid. So we're talking to clients at that point about how to get Medicaid eligibility. A single person, my mom is not married, she's widowed, and so for her to get qualified for Medicaid to help pay a nursing home, three things have to happen in one calendar month. She has to be in a nursing home that takes Medicaid reimbursement. There are a couple around the Jackson area that are private pay only, so they would not qualify. Second, she has to file the application. Now, you gave the Mississippi website for Medicaid. That's their website. I would encourage people to go there rather than try to just Google up your eligibility, because every state's Medicaid rules are different. Every state's Medicaid rules are different. So what you find on the internet is not going to necessarily be right in Mississippi. But you have to file the Medicaid application with all the bank statements and information they ask for. The third thing is she has to have less than $4,000 of countable assets. Well, what's countable? It's everything other than the non-countable. Does that explain it? So it's easier to say, what do they not count? They don't count her house and all the land it sits on. It could be a house on 50-100 acres. It doesn't count if it's her residence. They don't count her vehicles. They don't count her household contents and furnishings, all the appliances and everything in her house, personal property, that sort of thing. They don't count prepaid funeral arrangements she's made. They don't count prepaid burial spaces like cemetery plots she may have purchased. They don't count, and this is going to surprise folks, they don't, in Mississippi, Medicaid does not count IRAs and 401k type retirement plans if you begin taking out money at the right rate, which usually is what the IRS would require, but it may be a little bit different from Medicaid. So we have had clients on Medicaid in a nursing home that had a $150,000 IRA, and their children are named as the beneficiaries. And when they pass away, Medicaid doesn't get the money, the nursing home doesn't get the money, the beneficiaries get the money. So that, when you take those non-countable things out, what you've got left, money in checking and savings accounts, CDs, money markets, investment accounts, non-residence land, those are countable. If she's got more than 4,000 of those things, not eligible. Got to do something to get down below the 4,000. Now, if she's married, there is another set of rules. You can, a spouse at home can have up to $154,140 of countable assets. So if they have $100,000 in CDs and a $20,000 checking account and a house and two cars and those things, they could, that person's first spouse could get on Medicaid by putting everything in the at-home spouse's name, as long as when you do that, that spouse has less than $154,000 of countable money, the other spouse is eligible for Medicaid. And there are things that are allowable within Medicaid rules and policies and laws that we can do to sort of restructure things to get eligible, even where assets exceed the $154,000 plus $4,000.
And I always remind folks, especially when we've talked about taxes, we want folks to follow the rules, but you mm-hmm. need to know what the rules are so that you can avoid but not evade.
Yeah, and the numbers I just gave were not legal advice. They are general information. Consult your own attorney.
Exactly. Let's go. We've got a question. Let's go to Pearl and speak with Alan. Alan, thanks for calling in to In Legal Terms today. My guest is Richard Courtney, and we're talking about Medicaid. What's your comment or question?
Yes, ma'am. Thank you all again for taking my call. And Mr. Courtney, I have a piece of property that my sister and I own, and my stepmother has a life estate to it. And we're still learning all the red tape on this life estate stuff. My understanding that, and she's single and 80 plus, and I understand that at some point, if she has to go in the nursing home, does Medicaid look at that?
Well, Alan, Medicaid will look at everything. You have to disclose everything, but there's another item in what are called the liberalized resource policies. Mississippi is a lot more liberal about Medicaid things than a lot of states. And so one of those things is they say we will not count a life estate or remainder interest in property. So if she has a life estate and a piece of property, then that shouldn't be counted as an asset of hers for Medicaid in determining her $4,000. Now, if it's her residence, if she has a life estate in her residence where your father and she lived, then that wouldn't be counted as because she owns an interest in her own residence. A residence is not counted either. So two ways that wouldn't count. But that I hope that answers part of your question.
It did, and I sure appreciate that because we, you know, God forbid, if she has to go in a nursing home, we just kind of need to know what to expect.
Yeah, let me say one other thing about life estates. A lot of those deeds have been done in Mississippi to avoid probate, because if my mother signs a deed to me and keeps a life estate, that means she owns an interest in that property for her lifetime. But at her death, it automatically becomes 100% mine. Well, I own an interest in it while she lives, but I just don't have the right to exercise it yet. That interest in her homestead entitles her to keep a homestead exemption and keep her taxes low. But at her death, it doesn't go through probate, doesn't go through a will. It's automatically mine because the deed says I'm the remainder owner. Now, in Medicaid world, for your stepmom and you, for instance, if she went into a nursing home and you say, well, she's not living in that home anymore, what can we do with it? Let's sell it. If you sell it, Medicaid is likely to say, and they have in the past, well, the right to the income from that property while she's living means she has the right to all of that money. You don't get to keep a portion and she get a portion. So that money would go to her. It would put her over $4,000. She wouldn't be on Medicaid till she spends it down to $4,000, that sort of thing. So you have to be careful what you do with life estate property when there's a Medicaid application looming.
All right. Well, I sure appreciate it.
Good talking to you.
Thanks, Alan. We appreciate you calling in. You mentioned that every single state has Medicaid separately. So talk a little bit about how it's a federal program, but it's a state program, just for those of us who haven't entered, you know, we're not steeped with it every day.
Yeah, there are several. Well, it is a federal program. It was, like I said earlier in the show, it was signed into law in 1965, along with Medicare, to provide medical coverage for people with disabilities and people who are aging that is not covered by Medicare. So that's what Medicaid is. Now, it sets certain federal minimum requirements that states have to follow. Generally, that is if you have more than $2,000, you don't get Medicaid. But the federal law allows states to double that if they want to, and Mississippi did. So they say if you've got more than $4,000, you don't qualify. There are some allowances in the federal law for states to do things. Of course, back in 2010, when the Affordable Care Act, colloquially called Obamacare, when that was implemented to provide additional medical coverage for people through federal and state marketplace coverage policies, it did allow Medicaid and allowed states to provide Medicaid coverage to people, not necessarily disabled people, but people who have an income limit up to 138% of poverty level. And some states have expanded that, some haven't, and all for different reasons. So there are federal guidelines that states must meet, but then the states have wide discretion to set policies based on. I mentioned that IRAs, 401k type retirement plans are not counted in Mississippi. In most states, they are. Life estates are not counted in Mississippi. In most states, they are. So our state has been fairly liberal in allowing what you can do to have Medicaid eligibility.
So if you were going to state hop your residence for Medicaid purposes, there's quite a lot of facets to look at.
And a friend of mine who's passed away now, but he was in Missouri, and they have a different type of Medicaid program there called a 209B state. We're not. We're an SSI state. So you've got to be one of the two. But he said when people came into his office and said, well, how can I get my wife or my mom on Medicaid? He says he would look at their situation, said, you can move them to Mississippi. Rick will get them on Medicaid quick.
If you love to know your rights, you could also go to benefits.gov. Your path to government benefits to learn more about Mississippi Medicaid. There's a specific link for that I will have into this show's podcast information. Rick, the timid listeners have now called in, so we've got a few phone calls to get to. Let's start in Raymond and go to Daryl. Daryl, we're so glad that you've called in today. What's your comment or question?
Yes, my question is, my elderly mother is 89, and we applied for Medicaid, I think it was last November, and since then, and with the information you have on the show, it looks like she meets the threshold. She has a life estate. She doesn't have any assets over 4K. And I was just wondering, typically, how long does it take that process to work? I was just curious about that.
Well, Daryl, federal law says that state Medicaid agencies are to render a decision within 45 days after application, but that often does not happen that quickly, and you really can't sue the state if they're longer than that. So it can take some months sometimes. Medicaid agencies or their regional offices may be a little short-staffed at the time. They may have an extraordinarily high caseload. One thing that's all Medicaid offices have been dealing with since the COVID pandemic was announced to be over last May was unwinding what they had been stayed from terminating any Medicaid eligibility or changing it for anybody during the COVID pandemic. When that was over, then they have to start trying to get back in touch with people and see if. And a lot of people have lost their Medicaid because they're no longer eligible or they weren't then. But so they're all dealing with that. And that may be the reason. I don't know. They'll look at pieces of the application. They may send a letter saying we need a little bit more information about this or that thing. But once you've applied, the application and the eligibility will go back to the month of application.
Okay.
I had a case one time up in Pontotoc County. This was years ago. A lady filed an application for her husband. She admitted him to the nursing home in April, and she private paid the nursing home for April, for May, for June, finally had all the documents and information ready to file in July. We filed her application in early July. The Medicaid agency finally approved it in December, and they went back and they reimbursed the nursing home all the way back to April. They can go back up to 3 months prior to the month of application and reimburse the nursing home. So the nursing home had to give her back her 3 months of private pay when they did that. Medicaid paid the nursing home. So we hope that it works out that smoothly for your mom, but you may have to just wait on the Medicaid agency.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Sure.
Can you poke at them?
You can, yeah. You can say, if we're involved and we're handling the application, we'll send a little follow-up status letter sometimes. We'll call the caseworker and say, what status on this? And that's, they'll give us some response, and they know we're waiting on it.
Could you send them a box of donuts?
I haven't tried that yet.
Maybe send them a nice, edible arrangement?
Yeah.
To see if they can
Whatever
help you out.
Whatever works.
All right, let's go to Oxford and see what's up with Timothy. Timothy, we're so glad you've called into our show In Legal Terms. We've got Rick Courtney. He is an attorney and an expert on lots of estate planning, and today we're talking about Medicaid. What's your comment or question?
Yes, I was just wondering if me and my wife still live together now. We've been married 40-something years, but I wondering, does I have to report my income, or do we report both our incomes, or what, to get on Medicaid?
If a married person is going to apply for Medicaid, Timothy, Medicaid requires looking at all the information for both spouses. So, yes, you have to show them your income, your assets, because as I mentioned earlier, let's say my wife, if she was going to apply for Medicaid, she has to have less than $4,000 of countable assets in her name. I have to have less than $154,140 of countable assets in my name at the month we apply for her. They have to look at our bank statements and all of our deeds and property and all that to see, are we within those limits? Once she's approved for Medicaid, though, they will then say she has to use whatever income she has to pay the nursing home first, and Medicaid pays the rest of the bill. Part of that calculation is from her income, they say whatever her income is, she keeps $44 every month. She can pay her Medicare supplement insurance premium if she wants to keep a policy like that. And the spouse at home, if my income is less than $3,853, I would get to keep some of her income every month to get me up to $3,853 a month. So if my income is $2,800 and she's got $1,000 Social Security, I would get to keep all of her income and mine after she's on Medicaid. Medicaid would pay 100% of the bill to the nursing home. If my income is more than $3,853, I don't get to keep any of hers. So that's why they look at income as well, to see what she might have to pay the nursing home. Did all those numbers make your eyes glaze over?
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Timothy. Okay, so this gets me to, has anybody ever gotten divorced over Medicaid so that things aren't included, or people not gotten married because of it?
Yes, they have. They have used divorce. I'm aware of a couple of situations during my practice when the divorce was a Medicaid planning strategy.
Okay.
And now it's just this person's on their – the divorced spouse now does not have to disclose any of their assets to Medicaid.
What if you cohabitate?
Well, if you cohabitate, then that's not marriage
right.
in Mississippi. So
right. Okay. Well, lots of people get married for different reasons. I suppose folks can get divorced for different reasons.
Yes, and we usually are able to use money assets and get someone who's got more money than $154,000. We can get that structured where they're below the countable level for the month of application, and that's when that's the only time that really counts. After that, there's no limit on assets. So most of the time, we can avoid a divorce situation and get the person eligible otherwise.
All right. Let's go to Horn Lake and see what's up with David. David, we're so glad that you've called in. We are lucky enough to have attorney Rick Courtney on the show today to talk about Medicaid. What is your comment or question?
Well, I'm a widower with no children. I got a question. I've been toying with the idea about maybe getting a reverse mortgage. And if so, how would that affect if I was to try or need Medicaid in the future?
Good question. A reverse mortgage is a debt that you owe back. So that is not going to be an asset. The money that you put into your bank account could become an asset. Let's say you have a reverse mortgage, and those allow you to take money out of that equity in your home one of three ways. You could take all of it out at one time. You could take it out on a monthly draw of an even amount every month, or you could have it on a line of credit where I'll only take out when I need it. Now, if you're going to be going into a nursing home, it would be better not to take all of it out and park it in your checking account or money market, because then that becomes assets the next month, and it's you're over $4,000. But if it's still in the reverse mortgage as a line of credit, you still got a problem, because reverse mortgages say in order for you to have any access to the money, you have to still live in that home. And if you move out to an assisted living or to a nursing home, you lose access. The reverse mortgage cuts off. You no longer can get to that money. My father-in-law was the director of the Natural Science Museum for 30 years in Mississippi and then retired. He got Alzheimer's in 2011 and passed away in 2016. During that time, he could have gone to a nursing home and saved money from his income doing it. But my wife and her sister said, we're going to keep Dad at home. So they used up all of his money and then did a reverse mortgage on his house to keep paying 24/7 sitters. When they got that first draw out, I told him, take it all out and put it in his bank account. He wasn't eligible for Medicaid, and they weren't going to go that. But I said, put it all in the account, because if he has to go to a nursing home, you'll lose access. What are you going to need to do with this house whenever, you know, he passes away? We're going to need to fix it up. Yeah, and you'll have the money to do it from the reverse mortgage. And they did that. In your case, that really doesn't apply, because you don't, maybe you don't have children or someone you're going to want to leave the house to.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, David. We're so glad you have called in. Let's take one more call and go to Biloxi and speak with Adam. Adam, we're so glad you've called in. We've got Rick Courtney here, and we're talking about Medicaid today. What's your comment or question?
In Mississippi, and I imagine it's different in different places, but I understand that the question would be, who decides what is and isn't covered as far as within the Medicaid program in Mississippi? Like, for example, smokers, they are charged a higher premium in Mississippi as opposed to non-smokers. And who makes that decision?
Well, in Medicaid, there aren't premiums for most coverage. There is a coverage group called the working disabled for someone who has a disability and is working at least 40 hours a month. They can pay a minimal premium to get Medicaid insurance because they can't get private coverage otherwise, possibly. But otherwise, Medicaid doesn't have premiums that you pay. It's, do you qualify by income and resources or by disability level? So I'm not familiar with, restrictions on, say, smokers, like you mentioned, for Medicaid. If this person has COPD, which is incapacitating and requires that they are disabled enough, they need hands-on care with activities of daily living. That's generally the disability requirement Medicaid uses. Do you have to have assistance with two or more activities of daily living, eating, bathing, dressing, toileting, or walking? Well, if smoking had contributed to that, they still would qualify for Medicaid, I believe. So I'm not sure that I can answer that question the way you posed it, other than that.
Sure. Well, let's just say we have coverage through the Affordable Care Act.
Mm-hmm.
And here in Mississippi, getting coverage through the Medicaid coverage through the Affordable Care Act, even though it's not expanded in Mississippi, smokers would pay a higher premium.
Right.
And various FEMA.
Right, right, yeah. You mentioned the Affordable Care Act. That's really not Medicaid. That is private coverage through that you get through the marketplace, either the federal marketplace, and Mississippi now is talking about establishing a state marketplace where you could go and buy these policies. But those are like private insurance policies then. Yes, they can do medical underwriting so far as the risk and setting their premiums. So without having looked into those details more, I can't tell you, you know, why or who sets those other than the company sets their own underwriting criteria for who gets coverage and how much it's going to cost.
Sure. And to not to disagree or what have you, but it's through the federal government. So it's offered, the products are offered or paid for or contracted through private companies and insurers like Aetna and Blue Cross and Blue Shield and many others, that sort of thing. But it's available to the public through the federal government. And my question would really be who gets, because it's not the insurance companies. They could certainly offer rates and guidance as to what should be covered, how much, the percentages. But it's somebody here in Mississippi would decide or make that decision to say, this is covered, smokers get charged more.
That's something I can't really answer. That's a question maybe for the Department of Insurance. They would know that.
Thanks so much for calling in, Adam. But, you know, one thing you did mention is that Medicaid, you know, if you had a disability and you needed help with two or more tasks, who makes that decision?
Well, Medicaid would evaluate that, or you have to have medical documentation to provide with that. Medicaid would look at whatever medical documentation, doctors' notes and therapist's orders and so forth to determine if, in fact, you need help with two or more ADLs and therefore meet the criteria. For instance, my daughter Melanie, she's on a Medicaid waiver program. A waiver program is where Medicaid will pay for some services for someone who's not in a nursing facility, but in their own home, in an apartment. But they can get a paid attendant coming in, paid by Medicaid, to help care them with bathing and that sort of thing during the day, pay for other services sometimes. She's a wheelchair user. She has to have assistance walking, and she has to have assistance bathing. But otherwise, she can feed herself, she can dress herself, she can toilet with rails, you know, transfer without assistance. So she did meet the criteria for Medicaid to say, well, yes, you can qualify for this coverage. And she has a paid attendant coming in 4 hours a day, paid by Medicaid, to help her with those, the showering and the exercise program she's got to do and the other things. So they do evaluate it. Medicaid can request that someone go to another physician that they suggest to get evaluated. But usually you'll have enough medical documentation that you can establish the disability.
Mississippi Medicaid has a Twitter account. Oh, excuse me, an X account. The account is at MS Medicaid. So if you'd like to get some of your Medicaid information off of social media, well, you know, people just mindlessly scroll. And I think if you can just get a little factoid from the source, you know, while you're waiting in line at the restaurant or whatever it is, however you can get your factual information, I'm a big fan of that.
I think Taylor Swift follows MS Medicaid.
Yeah. I'm sure she does. We're talking with Richard Courtney today about Medicaid. We've got just a couple of minutes left. So what's the big question folks always ask you?
Well, can I give away assets to get on Medicaid? And who's going to take Mama's house if she's on Medicaid in a nursing home when she passes away? The answer to the first question is you can give away assets, but it may affect your eligibility. Medicaid says, well, if you've given away assets, you or your spouse given away assets within the last 5 years before the Medicaid application was filed, that can cause a delay in your Medicaid payments. Right now, the average cost of nursing home care in Mississippi, according to Medicaid, is $8,300 a month, $8,300. So if my mom gave me $83,000 now and 4 years from now, she's got less than $4,000 and goes in a nursing home and files for Medicaid, they would say, yes, she is approved for Medicaid. But we're not going to make any payments for 10 months because $83,000 given away when she could have, the average rate of care was $8,300, simple math division, 10 months. They say, we're not going to make any payments for the first 10 months. So that could be the effect. You can give assets to a spouse, no problem. You can give assets to a child with a disability. So we've had adult children who are on Social Security disability. Give the assets to that child, and they stay on disability if it's Social Security disability, and then the parent can get right on Medicaid. When a person dies and they own a home and they've been in a nursing home, current law in Mississippi is that if my mom is in a nursing home, owns her home, and it is her homestead still at the time of her death, and she passes away, Medicaid will waive their right to requirement. They don't have any right to recover her homestead and sell it to pay them back, which used to happen. But now, currently, the law says they don't because it's not part of her probate estate. It's if it's subject to homestead exemption at her death, it will go to her surviving spouse, child, or grandchild. So my brother and I would get the house currently. And that's the current status of estate recovery in Mississippi. And, of course, that could change by legislation over time. But a lot of folks, we've had lots of folks who said, well, you know, we get to keep mom's house after she passed away. I said, yes, you do right now.
All right. Now, was there some new laws that specifically did go into effect for Mississippi Medicaid, something about pregnant women?
Yes, they recently increased the coverage period for pregnant women on Medicaid from, I think, 6 months to 12 months. And so it allows for postnatal care, postpartum care through Medicaid to make sure those mothers stay healthy and help prevent that postpartum problems, that health problems that we were experiencing in the state. Currently, of course, the legislature is looking at Medicaid, other options for Medicaid, how to do a state exchange maybe where people can buy affordable policies and maybe increasing the income limit someone could have to get Medicaid in Mississippi.
Well, and this is April 23rd, 2024. In 7 days, this might change.
That's right. Yeah.
Rick, you're just such a gem. You've got so much great information. We always appreciate you stopping by in legal terms and sharing it with all of our listeners.
You got the best listeners in the world, so I love doing it.
Thank you so much for coming, and thank you for listening to In Legal Terms. Thanks for Marissa Vaughn, who's our board engineer, and I hope you can join us next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Central for In Legal Terms on MPB Think Radio.
Thanks for listening to this MPB Think Radio podcast. MPB depends on support from listeners, so if you can, please contribute today at mpbonline.org.